everybody. I'm Brian Saxon.
And I'm Michael Shields, and we are the hosts of Welcome to the Party, Pal, the mind-bending film and television podcast you didn't know you needed.
Welcome to the Party, Pal is a celebration of the art of cinema and filmmaking, where movies and television shows are deconstructed and analyzed to evaluate their grandeur.
Guests will include the filmmakers and industry insiders that craft the works of art that we celebrate here when you join the party.
Welcome to the Party, Pal is part of the Osiris Podcast Network.
I'm Bob Crawford.
I'm Ben Sawyer.
This is the road to now.
It is. Aren't you glad we followed it? Aren't you glad we got on that road and came to now?
Ben, I feel like I've been away for months.
I haven't talked to you in probably a month.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all right. It's funny because I haven't talked to you in a month. It's like I have to think about it to realize that because I've been slammed too. It's been like life has been crazy.
It is just getting crazier.
It is. I mean,
it's literally getting crazier. Friday night, we have the passing of Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Mm-hmm.
Who didn't know this was going to happen? I mean, I knew she was put on gemcitabine. I'm not saying the drug right, but 3 weeks ago, she went in the hospital. They said she's on this chemo drug. This is the chemo drug that they give you to buy more time. Mm. Like, we knew this was going to happen. We're also shocked. But she was 87. She had cancer 5 times. She was just in the hospital 3 weeks ago, a month ago. You know, this was, don't be shocked by this. Don't be bummed, be sad, mourn, celebrate her, but don't be shocked. Right?
Yeah. You know, like the passing of all great people, be grateful they were here.
Yeah. I mean, it's a big deal. The ramifications are exponential.
Yeah, but Bob, I mean, I haven't really looked at the news or anything since then. But, you know, it's going to be a big election this year because, you know, I just remember in 2016, Mitch McConnell said that in that year that when Scalia died, that they wouldn't appoint anybody. So I'm just, you know, I haven't really been following the news because there certainly couldn't be anything on that. You know, I mean, it was pretty cut and dry at that point. You know, people are like, but what if he changes his mind? I was like, he just straight up said it. Right. I mean, so it wasn't even like couch. Oh no, Bob, the way you're looking at me tells me that maybe he was full of shit. Maybe that's what I'm seeing from you right now.
Like Bill Clinton once said, he did it because he could. And he's doing it because, I mean, it's about power, right? This is about power.
Yeah, that's the thing I've been thinking. Like, this was what I was thinking about earlier tonight. It was like, what do you want, man? Like, what is it you want? Like, I guess I don't get it, man.
Judges. He wants judges.
Yeah, but why? Like, what do you...
Because that's his legacy. Remaking the federal judiciary is his legacy. What will happen is... I mean, because it's already happening, right? Trump's appointed more judges than anyone. I mean, that is his legacy, probably, other than destroying the country forever and changing a democracy into a whatever it's going to become. But I mean, if we remain a democracy, that will shape. It doesn't matter what law a Democratic Congress passes and a Democratic president signs, it will be challenged and it will have to face a conservative judiciary at every level, at every level.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the plan because conservatives have felt since the 60s, since the Burger Court or the Warren Court, it's the judiciary was very liberal. It was very progressive. And so now this is their opportunity to make it conservative. It ain't rocket science, as they say.
Yeah.
Makes perfect sense to me. So let's talk about who the replacements may be.
Okay.
Right? Because it's likely that, I guess there's a chance Trump doesn't get to appoint a judge, but either before the election or in the lame duck session, he's probably going to get his judge.
All right. So if you think about 2016, the thing that I felt, you know, it's like everybody was upset and shaken. And the thing I said was like, look, it was a strategy, man. You put a Supreme Court justice like on the table for that year. you know, and then more people are going to turn out. And like Republicans are struggling. Why would they even move on this before the election? Because they have a way, like there was nothing pulling like the base out this year. I mean, except for you got, I guess, your hardcore like Trump supporters, right? But there's nothing like swaying back and forth. Suddenly you can push all these issues that are like old school conservative issues again, like abortion or like, you know, Obamacare. Suddenly you can spotlight them because the Supreme Court gives you a forum for really hammering that home and saying everything means, you know, everything matters now. So why would you push it before?
So you're saying they can drag this thing out?
Yeah. And then you even, I mean, this is the thing with McConnell. It's like, for God's sakes, like he's, I mean, look, Mitch, if you're listening, everyone knows you're an asshole and you just did what you did. Like, everyone knows it. No one thinks that you have some kind of a difference between you, right? You're like, no, well, you know, the election before that, it was a slippery. Like, dude, you're like ESPN when they're like, I don't know, the Rangers have a hard time winning on Thursdays in October when it's below 70 degrees and there's clouds in the sky. You're just pulling some shit out, okay? Everyone knows you're doing that. So, but why would you do it when you realize that so many people are going to see through you? When you could just go, and this probably is worse, honestly, just go, hey, we're not going to do it like we said. And then you wait to see and you use it as an election wedge. And then after the election, if you don't win, you just go, ah, psych, and you pass it through anyway. That's what I don't get. Anybody?
I think that whether it's before, I guess Ginsburg was appointed in 47 days, which is pretty quickly when she was appointed in 93 by Bill Clinton. So we're at 46 days to the election. I mean, 45, 44. I don't know. I got to go back and do the, it's close for before the election. I'm sure they may try it, but even if it doesn't matter. I feel like it doesn't matter because they're going to do it in the lame duck session unless it can be blocked, right? Unless Biden wins and then Collins and Murkowski, maybe Romney, maybe another Republican say, well, listen, the American people have spoken, right? Especially if Biden wins in a landslide, they say, wait, the American people have spoken. They obviously don't want Trump to appoint this judge.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you say, if you're conservatives, if you're Republican, you say, let's ram this through. And we've got a 30 to 50 year old judge on the court that will be there. It's better than having a president, right? What was John Adams' greatest contribution?
Midnight appointments, dude.
Yeah, John Marshall. John Marshall was John Adams' greatest accomplishment as president.
Yeah.
So I think it's important for us to look at some of the leading candidates to replace Ginsburg on the court. Because I think there's one that if Trump picks her, could win him the election. Barbara Lagoa.
Yeah.
Cuban-American. She's very experienced on the court.
She was the former Chief Justice of the Florida Supreme Court, right?
She was nominated to Florida's 3rd District Court of Appeals by Jeb Bush. She served over a decade on that court. Then Trump nominated her to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit. She's a member of the Federalist Society, of course, close confidant to Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, but some have questioned her conservative credentials, especially on abortion.
Yeah, but that's not going to matter to Trump. He's not going to care. He's going to go, can I get Florida?
But that's what I'm saying. And she may pull moderate Republican women who were going to vote against Trump back on the Trump train. She may not look scary. She may maybe look like, if you're a conservative Republican woman who doesn't love Trump, you may say, I like this woman. She doesn't scare me. I like that she's conservative. She's not crazy conservative. I feel like having her on the court will give me the country I want.
You know what I want, Bob? And I know this is like where I go back to like theoretical level. It's like, I want a constitutional amendment that is 2/3 of the Senate has to vote to support. Like I want a clear, like non just 50%. Like I want 2/3 because I want every Supreme Court justice to not simply be appealing to one political party or the other. Maybe that's pie in the sky, but for goodness, could we not all agree on that?
Pie in the sky. Well, you know who's largely responsible for the predicament we're in today.
The Democrats, yes.
Harry Reid.
Yes, for changing the rules. Yes, I've reminded people of that. Yeah. It's real convenient when it looked like you were killing it.
I think court packing is a terrible idea. Didn't work out for Roosevelt. It will be, I fear, as we head down the stretch, it will become as damaging to the Democrats as the slogan, defund the police. Terrible slogan. Terrible slogan. I know what it means. I know what it means for real. But the slogan, defund the police, is damaging to the Biden campaign. I also fear court packing will be damaging to the Biden campaign. That phrase and that being tagged, him being tagged with that. I think you need moderate Republicans, anti-Trumpers to win this election if you're Joe Biden. And you don't need defund the police. You don't need court packing. You got to stay away from that stuff. These are my opinions.
I love the way it's like, if you went over to anyone and said, all right, I'm going to say a phrase. All right. And you tell me whether or not you think this phrase sounds positive or negative. Packing, defund. Like, God, man, the Democrats' message is
terrible.
Anyway, hey, guys, right now, we've been talking about a lot of things, and you're like, man, this has kind of been a down episode. Well, let me just tell you, if you go to Libro.fm, audiobook company, and download an audiobook, use promo code RTN for two, you'll get two books your first month. You can download BJ Novick, his book of short stories. So good. One more thing, it'll make you really laugh. Or you can download Sarah Vowell, where you can learn any of her books, where you can learn about history and laugh hard. Just going to put that out there. Audiobooks take me away right now, and it's kind of nice.
What about Lindsay Shevrinsky?
Lindsay Shevrinsky, October 4th, 2020, 9 p.m.
What about her book?
Yes, The Cabinet. The Cabinet is available on Libro.fm. Bob, why would you even bring that up right now? I mean, is it because I've got like the founders behind me, or is there another reason?
Because she's going to be our guest.
Yes, she
is. In a couple weeks, 2 weeks.
Lindsay Shevrinsky, right here on the road to now. She wrote The Cabinet, this amazing book about Washington's cabinet and the formation of an American institution. She will be here October 4th, 9 p.m. Eastern time, live on Zoom webinar with The Road to Now. I'm amped because I started reading this book. I said, hey, Bob, I know you're going to like this. You want me to get in touch with Lindsay Shevrinsky? And he was like, yeah, I've heard about that book. Like, and it's one of those beautiful times where we were both so excited. So yeah, go get it, Libro.fm, Lindsay Shevrinsky. You can get Lindsay Shevrinsky's book, The Cabinet, and get Sarah Vowell book, or get Lindsay Shevrinsky and get, you know, whatever you want. We've got a Road to Now playlist on there where all our past authors' books are listed.
Friends, let's hear from you. What's on your mind?
No open questions, huh?
Yes, we got one, right?
Uh-huh.
Amy, Ben, have you listened to the podcast Winds of Change?
Amy, I have not yet, but I want to. I've heard about it, and it's about the song Winds of Change by Scorpions, right? And how like the potential, like it goes through government funding, like it's somehow sponsored. I don't know the total story, but I'm really interested to hear about it. I have not, though, listened to it.
Let's hear more about Ben Scorpions fandom.
Look, that's about as far as it goes.
I saw the Scorpions.
You did?
At the original Monsters of Rock.
Yeah?
In Philadelphia. At our JFK Stadium. No, was it the Vet? Was it JFK? It was like Metallica opened. And then it was Dokken. The Scorpions.
Dude, this was been mid-80s.
And the headliner was Van Halen with Van Hagar. With Sammy Hagar. They rock. Of course they rock. Scorpions were great. I had that album. There were one of their albums.
Bob, I'm gonna give you some credit to Philly right now. I'm going to give you my honest response. When you tell me about a show that you went to in the past, I'm always like, man, that's awesome. And you go, it was in Philly. And I will say that just kind of makes it a little bit more awesome when you say that.
Well, that's where I went to all my concerts.
Yeah, I know. But you always say it. And I always like the visual. I guess because, like, you know, my mom grew up around there. When I was a kid, I went up there. Yeah. It just gives it some power. It's cool. Yeah, I don't have any Scorpions fan. I definitely have a fear of Scorpions. I have a fear of Scorpions, the creatures. And I think it's a reasonable fear because, look, in life you get one you either get pinchers or you get a poison tail, one or the other. It's not fair if you've got both, okay? So I just think my fear is totally reasonable because, you know what? They're over-equipped. So that's my statement on Scorpion the Animal. What have you been listening to, Bob?
Music-wise? I don't listen to music.
Yeah. Those of you guys listening, Bob looked at me like, so, what? His nose went up and he said, music-wise?
All I listen to the music of the 80s. That's all I listen to is the 80s. Seriously.
That's all right.
I'm really getting bad about that. The Jam. I've been listening to The Jam. Anybody remember The Jam? I've reached the age where I'm going back to probably the happiest time of my life, like when I was a teenager, and I'm just listening to that music.
Yeah?
I'm like, that's what you do when you get older.
Is it?
It's like you find that's why like old men, they dress a certain way and they always wear the same thing. Because they found something that they liked and they just stick with it. They don't care anymore.
I have to try that.
I'm just kidding, but I've been listening to Hall and Oates, Yola Tango, Frank Sinatra, Chris Shiflett, who I spoke with on the Politics of Truth. He's the lead guitar player for Foo Fighters, and he has some great solo albums. And then the kids like Imagine Dragons.
Oh, that's cool.
So my kids now have a band that they like that I'm not in, but they have like, they like real people music, like not kidding. Like they like kiddie music. Hallie likes kiddie music, but she also likes 80s music because we got her into this TV show called The Kids Incorporated to get her off of the little kiddie music.
I remember that show.
Now she's all about the 80s music. Bob, what is your take on the drive-in show? It was incredible. Yeah, no, it was really sweet. It worked great and no COVID cases. We're 3 weeks out now. No reported COVID cases from that they can trace back to our show, and everyone was well behaved and just beautiful. It was just great. Yeah.
I heard like from various people nothing but amazing things about that show.
It was really wonderful.
I mean, it was like
really great.
Dane told me, Alex Fang told me, like I just kind of like independently was texting with people that were there, and it was like, and then I was reading reviews, like the Charlotte Observer review. That's what I read. That was an amazing review. It's awesome, man. Still waiting for reviews on my history 2010, my U.S. history 1 class. They haven't come in yet, but they're all raving. They're all fantastic.
Hey Ben, let's talk about this. The History Commission.
Oh, you mean the 1770 Commission for a Patriotic History? You want to talk about that?
1776, yes.
All right, so anybody see this, by the way? You tell me in the chat over there. On Thursday, the Trump administration had welcomed a panel to the White House Commission on American History. You may have actually heard about this kind of somewhat because of the announcement that Trump made later in the day, that he was forming a 1776 Commission on Patriotic History, which is, I mean, quite frankly, guys, like me forming a panel on nuclear physics. I don't know anything about it yet. I'm confident when I talk about it in history. I don't know. Not really. Actually, I know better. But what a lot of people missed was that earlier that day, they kind of showed their hand about what it was they were trying to do. And this is ostensibly to battle the 1619 Project, this. Oh, which apparently is just that's everybody's textbooks now, which is not. Textbooks are still basically written by a couple of states and then hawked on the students of the country. Just a reminder, the most recent textbook cited Moses as one of the most influential factors on the Founding Fathers, which no one's saying faith didn't matter to them. It's just weird to single out Moses. That's all I'm saying. But anyway, so what happened with the White House a conference on American history was they invited a panel of people to speak at the White House, and it was a circus for the first part of it. There were a couple of actually like good historians on there, like I mean, like maybe one or two, like that said good things, but that's not the reason they were there. I guess they had to get some names. What they didn't have to get was anybody but white people, because they put Ben Carson up there in the middle of it, right in the middle of it. He has no clue. In fact, he seemed to have questioned the media. He said, we shouldn't tamper with the Constitution, which, as I like to call it, is amending the Constitution and needs to be done from time to time. And he also called the U.S. an empire to wrap up this conference. So a lot of really gold coming out of Ben Carson's mouth during this. Not that kind of doctor. I'm glad I could say that for someone else. So anyway, you break it down. Who are these people? The first person who spoke, let me just get my notes out here, Bob. I didn't expect to do this.
And there were a few. So Hillsdale College.
Yes.
Right. That's in Michigan.
Yes, it is.
And it was established in 1844 by Free Will Baptist abolitionists.
Right.
The religious right back in those days.
Yes.
And the funny thing is, was it the day before this or the day after this was Constitution Day?
It was the same day. It was Thursday, wasn't it?
It was the same day. So at the same time, these Hillsdale history professors were at the White House or wherever they were at this 1776 conference. William Barr, the Attorney General, was at Hillsdale College giving a speech. And this is the speech where he said, and I quote, "Putting a national lockdown, stay-at-home orders, is like house arrest. First of all, we didn't have a national lockdown. We had states had lockdowns, put lockdowns in place in certain counties, certain states, whatever, but we didn't have a national lockdown." William Barr also said, "Other than slavery, which was a different kind of restraint, this is the greatest intrusion on civil liberties in American history."
Yeah.
So staying at home, so you don't give the virus to someone like your grandparents or your parents or medically fragile children like mine, that's kind of like slavery.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a whole set of problems right there. Right. And this was the thing. This is, dude, we know what Barr's up to. We know what Trump's up to. We know the evidence doesn't lead them. We know what they
can. Can I say one more thing? Because this is kind of a trinity, if you will, of William Barr comments. A person, this is all within the same 25 seconds he said these things. "A person in a white coat is not the grand seer who can come up with the right decision for society. A free people makes its decisions through its elected representative." So what he's saying is, when you're in a pandemic, the doctor isn't the person, when the scientist, that's not the person who should give us the advice by which we deal with the situation. It's your elected representative who most likely is not a doctor.
And even if they are, they should have been busy enough being commander in chief not to have been able to keep up on the latest medical research as an expert has to, because experts have to spend all their time keeping up on things, especially when it comes to medicine. You know, let's go with what we feel in our heart of hearts. And I've always said, whoever makes political decisions based on what they feel in their heart of hearts deserves to be punched in their face of faces. But let's move on to these panelists here, because this is what I was getting at. And this was what I wanted to really like dig into. Because this didn't get the hype, because it wasn't Trump making some announcement where he got a huge round of applause. It wasn't Barr. It was the actual people that they decided to come up there and put them as the face of this new project. Let me just break this down to you. I will do a rundown of the panelists, okay? First of all, you're right. Three of them are affiliated with Hillsdale College. There were 9 total speakers, 3 of them from Hillsdale College. Hillsdale College, if you don't know, Hillsdale College is, they were so against affirmative action that they in fact stopped taking federal funding to be able to go around it. And then when the state of Michigan came in and said anything to them about it, they then just stopped taking funding from the state of Michigan because they've got a lot of wealthy donors. Upon the end of that, the president of Hillsdale College said, speaking to the state, he said he thought it might have been, quote, "because we didn't have enough of the brown ones." Let me get that quote exactly right. Yeah, he said the brown ones, right? He said, "we don't have enough of the brown ones," quote, "brown ones." Okay? The president of Hillsdale College who said that, what I think is a pretty clearly, if not intentionally racist, nevertheless, I don't care about this issue. That president was named Larry Arnn. He was actually also the moderator for this panel of the White House Conference on American Historians. The first speaker was Dr. Mary Graber, who has a PhD in English and just hates Howard Zinn. Like, she just hates Howard Zinn. And I will tell you this, the way that actual experts work is they don't go, "nuh-uh." Anybody who writes a book and goes, "nuh-uh, Karl Marx," or "nuh-uh, Adam Smith," that's not a real scholar, because they actually write and they prove with evidence, and that's what rebuts. You don't have to go, nuh-uh, I told you, you don't have to do that if you're a real scholar. So that's the first one. Second one, Dr. Peter Wood, who said that radicals are led by malice and that radical professors and colleges are to blame. Dr. Peter Wood's credentials are he has a PhD in anthropology. He was his most recent public appearance before this was in 2011 when he came out and tried to bolster the claims against climate change and say that wasn't real. And I guess he scurried back into his burrow and they pulled him back out for this one. He's very angry. Then you have Dr. Alan Guelzo, who he sounds like a 1930s radio show, but pretty amazing speaker and a legit scholar, but he just kind of told a story. You move on to, after that, Miss Victoria Espiato, who is just a fifth-year college student at University of Virginia who is in Young Americans for Freedom. Okay, cool. Seems smart, whatever. Then you get into the heart of it. Bill McClay, who's a historian, who is going to Hillsdale College. Then Mr. Ted Rabarber, who is developing a curriculum built around a book by McClay for his charter school system that he plans to pitch out as a patriotic history. So you have a business person in here that has direct ties to them. Then Dr. Robert Jackson, who is also a part of a founder and an administrator for a series of charter schools. Then finally, Mr. Jordan Adams, who is Associate Director of Instructional Resources at Hillsdale, who is part of the liaison team for Hillsdale College to their charter schools that they've set up all over the country. Do you guys, and that's very quick, but do you get that there might be a couple of themes here? Dude, experts tell you things you don't want to hear. You don't like it? Does it make you feel bad? Cool, because the private sector will sell you whatever you want to hear. We're going to outsource this stuff. Go to a charter school. Patriotic history. Dude, historians ask questions, propagandists give answers.
That was great. That was brilliant.
Was that fast enough?
It was great. Well done and succinct.
Thank you.
Is that right? Succinct?
I don't know. No one's ever said that to me before, so.
We have two questions here I'd like to get to before we end tonight's conversation. Matt Ensley, welcome back, Matt. What does Biden need to do to win the first debate on the 29th? Same for Trump. Well, I think Biden needs to be careful because Trump's just going to say stuff, right? He's going to say stuff and none of it's going to be true. He's just going to say things. And Biden's got to be careful to not fact check him, to be fact checking him all night, because you know the moderator, their job is not to fact check. I mean, they're supposed to, they're told not to fact check. That is for the other debater. That's the whole thing about the debate, is they challenge each other on what they say. So Biden needs to be careful to not get bogged down in fact checking Trump, which is what we're always doing, right? And what the media always does. That's why things are so messed up, probably. So I think Biden, he needs to be, I don't know if anybody watched the town hall meeting with Biden on Thursday night. It was excellent. He was amazing. He was working class Joe. He was tough. He needs to be working class Joe. He needs to take back the working class mantle from Trump. All those working class white men voted for Trump, and Biden needs, the way Biden was the other night, he completely was able to claim that mantle back. And I'd like to see that Biden, you know, just really compassionate, hammer home healthcare, hammer home the fact that one of the important things about what we're dealing with the Supreme Court situation is that the appellate court in Texas struck down Obamacare, and the oral arguments before the Supreme Court will be a week after the election. So if you have an 8-person Supreme Court and Roberts votes with the liberals, and it's 4-4, Obamacare is gone because it'll go back to the appellate court decision. So Biden needs to emphasize you're going to lose your pre-existing condition, pre-existing condition waiver. You're going to lose all that. So we need a Democratic president. We need a Democratic Senate so we can essentially pass Obamacare again and make it better, because it's gone. Obamacare is gone no matter what.
Do you guys remember 2016? You remember the debates? Because here's the thing. In the first one, Hillary Clinton did a much better job.
Killed.
It was the first one, right?
The second one was was 2 days after the Access Hollywood, and rather than drop out of the race, Trump got Bill Clinton's accusers and put them in the front, had a press conference with them right an hour before the debate, and then put them in the audience.
Yeah, so here's the thing. This is my read of it, right? Hillary Clinton is not very good on her toes. She's just not, right? Whatever you want to say about her, she's not really a charismatic speaker in the traditional sense, and she's not quick, right? I mean, this is my objective. It has nothing to do, right, with like my sentiment about her individually. Like, but they must have locked her in a room and just prepared her to talk about like three or four things the entire time and was like, if he says this, then this. If he says this, then this. And she, like, she's a good student, right? Like, she's intelligent. And so that's what she did. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a political advisor, but if I were anybody coaching Biden, I would say, here's the three things you will ever talk about at these debates. That's it. Whatever Trump says, if it comes back to you, you just go, hey, and you talk about something else, right? Because Trump's power isn't getting you worked up. As soon as he got her out on her heels with those accusers, man, suddenly he feels the energy. But if you just ignore him and talk and just basically do not acknowledge he responds to anything, he's also a child. You know, if Solomon wants something and, we don't hear him, he starts throwing stuff across the room, right? And then you see what a five-year-old he is. Just talk about three things. That would be my advice, but I'm also not a political advisor. I'm a podcaster.
Dale Martin asks, do you think social media is compatible with democracy? People seem all too happy to spread misinformation. They usually preface it with, I don't know if this is real, but Dale, I believe, like Roger McNamee last month when we had him on, that the problem in this country is not, well, I mean, Trump is a problem, but I believe Facebook is a worse problem. And we probably have Trump because of Facebook. And we didn't talk about QAnon tonight, but, you know, it's like this. It's like what Ben said about history. You know, historians ask questions, propagandists give you answers. Well, with Trump, he doesn't fit into the Christian faith, right? So they're essentially, QAnon is creating a faith around Trump.
That's smart,
to
Bob.
Suit, to fit him. I mean, that's what's happening here. That's why evangelicals are flocking to QAnon. It is the you know, it's just like how the Nazis changed Christianity to suit Hitler. And that's what's happening with QAnon. And that is a great fear of mine. And the way I listened to a podcast, Christianity Today podcast called Quick to Listen, and it was about QAnon and evangelicals, and it scared the hell out of me. I mean, QAnon, they're popping up on like Peloton message boards, like fitness message boards, like QAnon. It's spreading rapidly through the pandemic, right? It makes sense that in a pandemic that something like conspiracy theories would spread. I mean, but that's what's happening. And I don't know if you all at home have seen it in your life, but I've seen it in people I know. And I don't know about you, Ben, but it is something that we're not all talking about. It's not in all the headlines, but you do have a few congressional candidates, Republicans, who are QAnon believers, who have been, they will have a seat in Congress in 2021. So this is, we're at the beginning of this, and it's really bad, and Facebook is the problem.
Well, it's not just the problem, it's exploiting us. But what I'll say is, I will cite Joe Rogan as having the single best response to QAnon I have ever heard, which was, so you're telling me that Donald Trump is doing one thing, right? All the things he brags about he didn't do. You tell me that Donald Trump is doing one thing we would all agree, saving these children and saving, you know, bring us into the light. He's doing that one thing we would actually agree on. It would be the most heroic thing of his life. And that's the one thing he's just chosen not to talk about. Shout out Joe Rogan. I want him to moderate a debate.
I agree. I read that somebody brought that up this week, and I think that's a great idea. And Brown Betts, have either of you read the book Arguing About Slavery, John Quincy Adams and the Great Battle in the United States Congress? No, I've seen this book, but I have not read it. By William Lee Miller. and or what are some of your thoughts? I love John Quincy Adams. He's like Martin Van Buren. He's one of my favorite presidents.
I think Adams is interesting in that, like, he seems to, like, you know, the general idea is that he's the first of the non-founders who's the president, but he's from the Adams family. From the Adams family, it sounded weird, but he's like from that family. And so, like, he comes in and he's playing the old games and he loses, right, to Jackson. But then he seems to come around and really, because he's smart. He also spoke Russian, by the way. He was on the court of the
Congress.
Czar.
He loses the presidency and he runs for Congress, and there he is. He literally dies in Congress on the floor of Congress. I mean, it's just great. He becomes this champion of abolitionism and against the Mexican War. So he's an amazing figure. In fact, I have a book, I don't know who wrote it, The President Who Wouldn't Retire. And it's all about his JQA's time in Congress.
Yeah, we should have him on the podcast, Bob.
Be great. Yeah.
No, but before we go, like, look.
Oh, wait. We had something else we had to talk about.
Yeah. And this is sincere. This week was stressful as could be for me. It was like I did like a Fulbright committee meeting. I was mentoring a student through a legislative internship, like all these things I did. I hosted trivia for the National Conference of State Legislators this week, which shout out to Tim Story. That was so much fun. I love working with those guys. It was a crazy week. And I was like, it's one of those feelings where you're like, everything's compressed, you know? And then I got a text from Jamie Jeschke, like it was to me, you and Chris Breslin. And he was like, hey, just made some fresh coffee. Would you guys want me to send you some?
It was very nice.
It was, yes. Jamie, if you're listening, literally, like, you know how sometimes just an act of kindness will, like, it just, you just go, oh yeah, there is something outside of all the things that have got me like kind of compressed. So, you know, this week would be the worst week to forget to tell everybody to go to LaCosecha.com, right, Bob?
Of course you should go to LaCosecha.com and you should support Jamie. He's a good friend of ours. It's great coffee, you know, and isn't it nice to get things? Raise your hands. Who is doing their shopping on the computer? I mean, I'm doing most of my grocery shopping is online. We're having stuff shipped in still. I'm still doing this. So, I mean, wouldn't it be nice, you know, and it's nice to get things in the mail. So a pound of coffee is a wonderful thing to get in the mail. Because, and you're supporting Jamie.
And you're supporting our sponsor. Like, you're supporting us.
And it's great
us.
Coffee.
Yeah. And, dude, it is, I don't know about you guys, but in Nashville this weekend, like in the last few days, it's finally felt like fall. And it's like, you know, it's like a couple times a summer. I told you guys, I don't drink coffee that often. When I drink it, it's LaCosecha coffee just because I like it. And now it's like, it turned cold and I was like, not cold, but you know, fall time. And I was just feeling like, oh man, this is like the perfect time. I feel like there's a bullseye on a map to hit to send me a pound of coffee or to get a good pound of coffee right now is it. So go to LaCosechaCoffee.com. Enter promo code RTN10. That's RTN, the number 10. I'm telling you, like, Bob, we have sent this coffee to our guests on the show. And, you know, like with Jason Stark sent us like the best email. He was like, it was like a week after we told him we were sending it to him. And he was like, this coffee is so good. And by the way, I believe anything Jason Stark says. The man is an angel. But
he's there. He's at the vet right now.
There he is over there.
He's right first baseline. He's got seats right there.
Yeah, he made it out of the closet underneath there. Long story, right. You have to go back and listen to the Jason Stark episode on the history of baseball. Right. But yeah, so go to LaCosecha. Like right now, we need our small businesses to have our support. And I can't even say it. Like it's weird because we only have sponsors, Bob, that I love. And I don't know if people are like, man, he's really putting it on. But it's like, no. We've been working with these guys for years. And I love what they do. And we hope you go to LaCosecha, LaCosechaCoffee.com. RTN10, and we'll hopefully you'll be drinking some good coffee soon. Get yourself all amped up like me.
Dale said all the predictions that the QAnon that don't come true, but people don't care. That's conspiracy theory, right? It doesn't matter. Oh, it didn't come true because of this and because of that. And yes, Mary, we are going to have a post-election debrief. We're working on somebody to come on. You know, maybe we should get those guests on after the election rather than before the election. Because last time we had them on right before the election and, you know, things were crazy. I almost feel like we should ask them to come on the Sunday after the election, which I bet will still be counting the votes. And Trump will have declared himself the winner, even though all the votes aren't counted. It's going to be crazy.
I also love that Trump has in North Carolina encouraged people to potentially commit a felony by voting twice in North Carolina, which will, I believe in North Carolina, well, right now it's changed, but it was awaiting a final decision. But in North Carolina, he's encouraging all his voters to potentially do something that will make them ineligible to vote in upcoming elections, which tells you everything you need to know about what his strategy is. He goes, I've only got to win one more. Who cares?
North Carolina, this is the last thing, I do have to go. They've done a great job with the absentee ballots, getting them out early. They've already had over 100,000 come back. You can track your ballot online. So almost 1 million absentee ballots went out. 900 and some thousand went out. I follow this guy, Michael Bitzer, on Twitter. I'll have to get his handle for y'all. But he's an expert in North Carolina politics. He's constantly posting the numbers. Okay, so first of all, if you have an absentee ballot in North Carolina, you can mail in your ballot. When you mail in your ballot, you can track it online. So they've already had, out of 970,000 some absentee ballots requested, 110,000, something like that, have been returned and logged already. And they can, so they're counting those votes as they come in. So you're not going to have the situation in North Carolina like you're going to have in Michigan. Michigan's already said, we're not going to have the vote total for 3 or 4 days afterwards, which is terrible because that's going to give Trump an incredible opening if it's a close election to declare a victory. Biden's got to win Arizona. Biden's got to win Texas or Georgia or Ohio or Iowa. He needs to be able to win on election night without any of these mail-in ballot states. But Pennsylvania, they're going to have issues as well.
I've heard a lot of people being concerned that they're going to throw out Trump voters' certificates in North Carolina. You know, the conspiratorial thinking is so insane because, like, I've seen people from back in Cabarrus County saying, you know, because what Trump said was vote by mail and then go down to the poll to see if they've counted your ballot, which is psycho because why would you vote before if you were just going to go down there anyway? But people were like, just to make sure my ballot's going to count. So I actually pointed them directly to the Cabarrus County Voter Commission where they could actually go to a meeting. And then I told them, you can actually be a poll worker so you can observe it yourself and serve your community while you make sure it's not happening. And they were like, I'm too busy. It was like, well, you can spend some of that time. You post the conspiracy theories on it. But I want to end on this. Okay. For those of you guys who were worried and go, did my vote count? All right. Here's one way you can know. If every single person who wants to know if they voted, it's a Trump voter, right? To make sure it counts. Write my name in, Ben Sawyer, as governor of North Carolina. All right? And if that way we'll know if the same number of votes that go for Trump go for Ben Sawyer, then we'll know for sure that your ballot was counted. All right? I'll see you. Look forward to seeing you guys at the inauguration in 2021.
But I don't want you to take away votes from Roy Cooper.
Well, last year, he's taking votes away from me, Bob. I'm just kidding, obviously. I was proposing a solution as stupid as the question. That's what I was trying to do.
Well, you need to stick with historians who ask questions, not propagandists who give answers.
That's right. Look what happens when we try. Look what happens when we try. We're not even good at it.
All right, everybody. Well, it's been a wonderful Sunday evening. Look forward to seeing you again real soon.
That's right. We'll talk to you guys on October 4th. See you guys on October 4th for our conversation with Lindsay Chervinsky. Side note, it's also my birthday.
By the way, do not miss that.
Thank you for listening to another episode of The Road to Now. The Road to Now was hosted and produced by Bob Crawford and Dr. Benjamin Sawyer. And today's music, like pretty much always, is by the wonderful Paul DeFiglia. If you have not gone and rated us on iTunes, please do so. We need you to do that so we can spread the word about this podcast. Everyone who has, we say thank you. Speaking of thanks, we'd like to say a special thanks to everyone on Patreon who helps make this podcast possible. With a special shout out to our Washingtonians, Tanya Marsh, Mary Hawking, Paul Ayler, Tim and Caitlin Wells, Fig White, Jeff LeCain, Peggy Donica, Susan Sharp, Joseph Mann, Matt Williams, and Mariah
Wolford. If you'd like to join our community of patrons and get lots of extra content, just go to patreon.com/theroadtonow and pick a tier. For as little as $5 a month, you get access to episodes 1 through 75, some extras, bonus content, and it only gets better from there. For Bob Crawford, this has been Sawyer. Thanks for listening, and take care.